Among the hardest hit populations in this global pandemic are people who are homeless, marginally housed, immunocompromised, and people who use drugs. What are you seeing in terms of public health response?
Those are the populations of folks that are always the hardest hit by pretty much anything. So if you are somebody who is experiencing homelessness, how do you do social distancing? And when your day-to-day survival relies on interactions with other people, you're clearly going to be at a higher risk. And then when you think about people who use drugs, this is going to significantly impact the drug supply, number one. So when borders are shut down and trafficking routes are impacted and people can't be doing street dealing or street hustling, then it makes for a much more dangerous supply. And number two, if people don't have access to the things that they usually use to either medicate or to survive or to stave off withdrawal, then this becomes a very dangerous situation. And I think it's important to note that we're not just talking about illicit substances. We're talking about policies in places like Pennsylvania where they're going to be closing liquor stores. That's really terrible public health policy because people that are going to go into alcohol withdrawal that wouldn't otherwise are going to experience symptoms. They're going to be showing up at the emergency departments. They're going to be suffering at home. People might have seizures. People might die. These are things not usually thought of when we think of a public health response to something like a viral pandemic like we're experiencing now. And our response generally leaves those folks out or flat out disproportionately harms those people.
The liquor store closures in Pennsylvania remind me of what I heard from the Massachusetts governor, where he was going to be closing the dispensaries for recreational marijuana. Lots of people who don't have a medical marijuana card are self-medicating by using recreational marijuana. Is that the same kind of harm?
If you think back to the fact that we had what, this is not my term, but when people called the vaping public health crisis, every single piece of research points to the fact that the vast majority, if not all of those lung illnesses were related to cartridges from the illicit market because of vitamin E acetate. The thing that we know works to prevent that is a regulated available market. And Massachusetts actually did put those cartridges back on the market once they were able to regulate them. And this is a stressful time. Everybody's making jokes on memes on Facebook and on social media about liquor stores and about, you know, holing up in your house and binge watching and making sure you have enough liquor. It stops being funny when you think about it in terms of what if we did shut down liquor stores? What if people went back to drinking other things? And that's what we're going to have on the cannabis market. People are going to go back to buying illicitly made cartridges. And now we're going to have a surge in lung illnesses, which, by the way, when you have something like COVID-19, that the major symptoms that people are experiencing and the thing that ultimately leads to a lot of fatalities is a lung illness, it couldn't make any less sense from a public health perspective to close dispensaries in Massachusetts or anywhere else.
What kind of policies are you recommending that localities put in place to mitigate the harm?
If we think about things like alcohol and cannabis, those shops need to stay open. The places where people can get a regulated, safe supply of those substances need to remain open. And not only that, but we should be thinking about that in terms of home delivery. All bets are off when you have this. We have to keep as many people from the medical and hospital systems as possible. And that might mean making some decisions that average people might not think would be sensible. We have to sort of gut check now to say, what do sensible policies look like to flatten the curve when we want to spread this thing out as long as possible? But we have to do everything we possibly can.
One piece of advice that folks were given at the start of this period of isolation was to stock up on medication to make sure you had a 2 to 3 month supply. What about folks receiving methadone treatment? These are folks that have to go to a clinic every day to be medicated.
So for people who aren't familiar, you know, methadone is heavily regulated by the DEA and by state regulatory body. In New York, what that means is OASAS has additional regulations for how to operate clinics. There are a relatively small number of people who do get it from a doctor. It's mostly for pain relief, not for treatment of opioid use disorder. But the vast majority of people have to obtain that in a clinic setting. This could be an entire interview about what's wrong with the way we dispense methadone in this country versus how other countries do it. So for example, in Canada, people get their methadone at a pharmacy, which means that they can get it in their community or in their neighborhood, and it's far less disruptive to their lives. Here in this country, people are going to largely urban-centered clinics from suburban and rural areas where many times they have to travel every day. In fact, for a while here in the capital region, before we had a methadone program that was north of Albany, people were coming from Plattsburgh to Albany every day to receive a dose of a medication that they need to go about their life. So you can imagine how disruptive that would be. And there are things called take homes, which means that you get either several days or in some cases, a week or multiple weeks of that substance to take home with you so that you can dose at home. It's incredibly restrictive because the concern is the risk of diversion of those substances so that somebody would either give or sell that supply to someone else. Those are valid concerns in many ways, but have been overblown in many other ways. It is very hard to get take-home doses in methadone, especially if you're new to the clinic. So usually they require a certain amount of time where you've shown good behavior and shown that you can be responsible and that you don't have things like positive urinalysis for other substances, or that you show up for groups or that you show up for appointments, and that over time you can build up enough goodwill with the program where they will give you take-home doses. Now, that is bad policy to be restrictive about take-home doses in any situation, including the fact that we're in the midst of now a multi-decade overdose crisis that frankly should have been enough for clinics to be moving towards much less restrictive take-home policies. Now you have a situation where the last thing you want is hundreds of people showing up to a clinic every day and congregating. And it took both federal and state guidance to move programs to be able to be less restrictive around that. None of the policies say that everyone should get take-homes, however. It says that people should, if they're eligible, that they should get them. Programs should be reasonable about their policies around that. And it's still not going to be enough. We still have people coming to clinics to get those substances. To be clear, the thing that should happen is that as many people as possible should get a month's worth of take-home methadone.
In terms of overdose prevention, the advice for so long has been don't use alone, and to have people who are drug users carry naloxone so that when they're using with their friends and a friend overdoses, they're able to administer that naloxone. Now people are staying at home alone. What's the best practice in this case?
You should be able to call a phone number anywhere in the state or in the country and have somebody telephonically assess your acuity for buprenorphine and prescribe and have you pick up at a pharmacy in your neighborhood and get induced on buprenorphine immediately. Because if people move away from heroin or fentanyl or other opioids to buprenorphine, we know that people are going to be much more safe, even if they continue to use. Most people are not using to get high. Once you have a habit, you're using to not get sick.
Is that allowable under current law?
It is. And the thing that's remarkable to me is that while it's allowed and it's actually been advised during this crisis, the thing we actually need to reckon with in our treatment system is, in many cases, it's more about philosophy and less about regulation. So the regulations have allowed that for some time. They've certainly been ramped up. But I think we need to really come to terms with the fact that much of our treatment system is an extension of law enforcement and our other carceral systems, where it's not so much about having people get better, but it's about power and control and somehow maneuvering people or otherwise coercing them into doing what we as a system want them to do. For example, there's no reason why somebody should have to go to a bunch of groups a week and appointments if they're on buprenorphine and they're perfectly stable and their life is going fine. Any provider that's still requiring people in this crisis to come to groups or to even to do counseling sessions or anything needs to really think about why they're doing that. Are you doing that because it works? Because the evidence actually doesn't show that that's any more effective for most people than just giving people the prescription. It's what France did when they had an overdose crisis that significantly dropped their death rate. They just made it available to people. They didn't make people jump through hoops. They didn't make people go to groups. They didn't make people go to appointments with counselors 5 days a week. They just gave it to people.
If someone in our listening audience is struggling with drug use during this pandemic, is there a resource?
In the Capital District, I would strongly encourage people to call Project SafePoint's Drug User Health Hub. Those are folks who will, number one, make sure that people are safe. So make sure you have naloxone, Narcan, syringes and safer supplies, safer smoking materials if people are smoking crack. But secondarily, we'll link people with whatever resources are available to do that low threshold access. Here in Schenectady, as part of our COVID response, We've been making the number for both Project SafePoint and also the CODI project, which is run through New Choices here, where they're willing to do telephonic and telemedicine induction for people for buprenorphine. So, you know, if somebody's struggling and doesn't have access to the usual supply, or they're just scared about overdose, they should call those numbers or any of the other local treatment providers and ask if they do telemedicine induction for buprenorphine. That's the best we're going to do right now, to be honest. People should make sure they have naloxone. If at all possible, people shouldn't use a loan. They should be creative about that. There are certain services where they can either call a number and say, you know, if you don't hear from me in a half an hour, please check in on me, make sure I'm okay. You should do that with a friend. I mean, listen, we have FaceTime and you have Google Hangouts and we have Zoom and we've got all these resources. So even if you're going to use a loan, FaceTime with a friend where if you fall out, they can check in on you and even try to yell at you and wake you up. And if they don't, then maybe they could send somebody over to make sure you're okay. These are tough times. These are times where people who use substances to feel better are naturally more prone to using more of them and using them less safely in many cases. So this is all hands on deck. This is, we need to keep everybody alive during this crisis.